Welcome and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, IMS 11 Open Database, Modernizing IMS Database Access. Today's teleconference will be recorded, will last approximately 60 minutes, and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn about one of the most significant and anticipated deliverables in the upcoming release of IMS 11, IMS Open Database. The speaker for today's teleconference is Kyle Charlet, IMS SOA Technical Lead Developer. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our speaker, Kyle Charlet.
Hey, thanks. So again, my name is Kyle Charlet, and I'm in the IMS SOA team working on modernizing IMS assets. And I'll, as we go through this presentation, I'll make sure to try to call out the chart number that I'm on so you can keep in line with where I'm in the presentation itself. So on chart one, that's really our overriding SOA strategy is the idea that there's a ton of pre-existing IMS, both IMS data and IMS transactions that are already existing, and the ability to leverage those transactions and data across the enterprise is actually critical to the success and growth of business. So what we do is we ensure that that existing IMS workload and existing IMS data, what we're doing is we're injecting technology into IMS in order to enable those transactions and data to be shared across an SOA infrastructure. And in line with that, we're making sure that we're integrating with the IAM portfolio of tools and solutions, right, in order to unlock those data and IMS transactions. You know, so WebSphere and Rational play a huge role in what we're doing. We have a lot of heavy integration there, and you'll see near the end of this presentation, I'll talk about future integration strategy that we have to even further modernize the IMS solutions that we have today. One of the big things that I personally cover a lot of is really encouraging new application development, right? And the ways to do that is really support the new standards that are out there. So to rattle off a bunch of acronyms, you know, there's JDBC, there's JCA, which is the Java Connection Architecture. That's a part of the whole JEE, Java Enterprise Edition, kind of enterprise application development, integrating with JEE servers. There's SOAP, there's XML. There's a lot of new technology that we're really bringing to bear for IMS, such that IMS really can be treated as a standards-based both transaction manager and data server. And as well, we're looking at partnering with ISVs and vendors to really kind of facilitate the exploitation of SOA. So moving on to chart two, you know, IMS Open Database is one of the key functions in version 11 of IMS. And what we're really doing is taking on the challenge of really modernizing both IMS database access and application development. And what it does is it addresses two significant bottlenecks really for business growth in our client install base. And those are connectivity and programmatic access. So connectivity for one. The IMS database has historically, you know, been grounded to the mainframe, right? There are certainly ways to get to that data, but none are really straightforward and simple. And what we see a lot of times are a lot of proxy solutions. So, for example, they'll proxy IMS data back to distributed clients via IMS transactions, via DB2Z store procedures, via CICS transactions, right? Because these transactions can be web-enabled or you know, ESB-enabled to be accessed from distributed platforms and runtimes, or even external, you know, Z runtimes. And while those solutions work, and many of them have merit, there's just a lot of additional moving parts there. There's a lot of infrastructure that has to be put into place in order to enable those solutions. So what we've done is enabled very simple and straightforward TCP/IP connectivity directly to the database. And we'll get into the underpinnings of how that works. Again, connectivity is an issue. Another is programmatic access. So even when connectivity isn't an issue, you know, there's a lot of skills that are impacting a client's ability to develop new IMS workload. And, you know, certainly, you know, the native IMS language is DL1. And while that is certainly an IMS standard, it's not an industry standard. So there's not a lot of prevailing skills out in the market that you can tap into to start writing DL1 based applications. So what we've done is we're really kind of front ending DL1 with new technologies such as JDBC, such as JCA, and I'll get into that. But what it really does is it provides, you know, it exposes IMS as a standards-based data server, right? So we can plug into existing tools and frameworks that exist, and then we've handled really both the connectivity side and the application development side. So what we're doing is rolling out an entire suite of what's called universal drivers. And we have three universal drivers. We have, you know, a universal DL1 driver. You know, for one, we're never going to forget about DL1. I mean, we can't. That's what we're built on top of. And the universal DL1 driver is really nothing more than a Java abstraction of the DL1 syntax. So in that driver, you're going to see very basic constructs for basic DL1 constructs. You're going to see get uniques, get hold uniques, get next within parent. You're going to see all the command codes and lock classes. You're going to see the segment search arguments, all abstracted neatly into a Java object-oriented programming paradigm. Then moving up a layer, we have our universal JDBC driver, which that offers JDBC and SQL access to your IMS data. And then the next level is a universal database resource adapter. We have two resource adapters in IMS. We have a universal, we have an IMS TM resource adapter, and that allows access to existing IMS transactions. You know, whether those transactions are written in COBOL or PO1 or Java, that's the role of the IMS TM resource adapter. This new adapter I'm talking about is a universal DB resource adapter, and that allows JEE, so Java EE, so think Web3 application server, it allows access from those runtimes to go ahead and go directly to your IMS data. Now, those three universal drivers, they actually share a probably 90% of that code is a shared common framework across all three drivers. And it's not until the lowest level that we either go, you know, TCP/IP into IMS, or we recognize that we're actually local to the D platform and go through existing assembler modules to get to your IMS data. It's important to point out that, you know, in either of these two solutions, we did not reinvent an access path to IMS. We're still built on the decades-old, you know, DL1 interface, either the assembler DL1 modules, whether they be AER to DLI or CEE to DLI or AIB to DLI, right? So all of the performance and scalability that has already been built in to these assembler modules, we're taking direct advantage of those. And what we've done is just built, you know, as thin a Java layer as possible on top of those existing assembler interfaces. So moving forward to chart 3, you'll see that these same universal drivers, you know, applications that leverage these universal drivers can run on any distributed platform that has, you know, an IP stack. So if you have TCP/IP, we can get you to the data. As well, these same universal drivers are capable of deployment on the mainframe. Right, so on the mainframe, it's really within IMS dependent regions, so having IMS Azure Transaction Manager, within DB2 Z stored procedures, within Web3 application server on ZOS, and within CICS. So CICS applications, so in there you have CICS as your transaction manager. The applications themselves, by virtue of the universal drivers having this common framework, applications don't need to change at all. Depending on where they're deployed, right? So application developers don't need to be concerned with that. All that really needs to be changed is the actual connection semantics of those applications. So, you know, you're either going to be, you know, a type 4 driver, type 4 usage, which means you're running distributed or TCP/IP based, or type 2 based, which means, hey, I'm running local on Z, I'm local on the mainframe, I want direct a route as possible to my IMS data store. In which case, we won't leverage TCP/IP. We'll go directly in through the assembler modules that I spoke of earlier. So what we have in our drivers is environment detection protocols that are actually built into the driver themselves. So not only do we understand whether we're running distributed or local, we also understand what local runtime we're operating in, and as well what distributed runtime. So the local side is where it gets more interesting. We have environment detection so that we'll know, okay, we're running in CICS, so we have to go through this set of assembler interfaces to get to the data, or running in an IMS-dependent region, so we go through this set of assembler interfaces, and the same with DB2. So again, all of that is completely masked by the applications. They don't need to know where their target deployment environment is going to be. We all manage that internally to the drivers themselves. One of the other things that that I want to point out here is I'm giving at the upcoming Information on Demand conference in Vegas, actually 2 weeks from today, a similar talk on open database. There's a lot that I can talk about then that I can't talk about now, and there's demos that I can show then that I can't show now. So there is going to be significantly different content at the IOD coming up in 2 weeks. So if you're able to attend, you know, I do encourage you to come to my session and talk to me. And if you have any follow-on questions that didn't get addressed today and you want to think about them over the next few weeks, go ahead and hit me up then. As well, my email address is right on this presentation. Feel free to contact me directly. That's fine as well. Normally what I do show here is a demo where we've actually taken the DB2 JCC driver and the IMS Universal driver and plug them into a Flex application, Adobe Flex application, that actually has a discovery mechanism to discover compliant JDBC drivers and start issuing SQL queries to those drivers. And so what we did was we took, you know, a DB2 database and modeled it the same way as we modeled an IMS database. So they have the exact same schema and the exact same data, and we're using the tool for a database discovery, so it's discovering all the tables and the relationships and the columns and the types of columns and everything, as well as issuing the same exact SQL queries to both IMS and DB2 subsystems. So it's pretty powerful to see that we now have really standardized SQL access to IMS, standard enough that a tool that we didn't even write is now able to leverage our driver and actually extract data from our IMS data source. So moving to chart four, we're just going to start getting into the architecture a little bit. I'm not going to dive really deep, but I'm just going to give you a general feel for the topology here. Our current solutions today that we have, by today I mean as of version 10 of IMS, are, if we focus on the ZOS side, you'll see, and I'm just picking up WebSphere as the runtime. Again, there's other runtimes on Z. This isn't restricted to just WebSphere, but for the purposes of showing the architecture, I've chosen WebSphere to show. We leverage what's called ODBA. You'll see a little rectangle there called ODBA. That ODBA modules have been around since version 6 of IMS. And what those offer is external access to IMS data. So you don't use ODBA from within an IMS-dependent region, for example, but you do use ODBA from either DB2 Zstore procedures or from WebSphere application server runtimes. And ODBA modules really, you know, connect us into to a DB control region. And today our libraries, you know, leverage ODBA. ODBA has some properties such that it makes address-space-to-address-space calls to IMS data, to the IMS data source. So applications that use ODBA are bound to the same LPAR as the actual IMS database itself, right? So in this topology, for every IMS database that you want to access, you know, unless you're in a, you know, kind of a data shared environment, you need to have a WASZ installation on that same LPAR to use our existing Java technology to extract data. I talk about data extraction, but we offer full CRUD, so full, you know, select, insert, update, delete is offered. So, you know, and we do have a distributed solution today, but it's really not recommended for production at all because it requires a distributed WebSphere communicating with a WASZ to get to your IMS data. The reason for that is we needed a TCP/IP endpoint on the host to field these distributed requests, and we don't have one until version 11, and I'll get into that in the next couple of charts. So moving forward to chart number 5, what we've done in version 11 now is introduced this ODBM component. So you'll see ODBM in LPAR A. ODBM really is an address space that houses ODBA, right? So it leverages ODBA directly. The communication mechanism used to send requests to ODBM is SCI. Now, SCI allows cross-LPAR communication. So as long as you're within the same IMS Plex, you can now go cross-LPAR from client to ODBM to access the data. So this particular chart is showing WASZ using SCI to communicate over to ODBM. That's not actually a solution that exists today, either in 10 or in 11. This is just showing the evolution of, you know, with ODBM, with SCI, the potential of having WASZ leverage SCI to go cross-LPAR. What we're really getting to is the next chart 6. In version 11 of IMS, we have augmented IMS Connect to also be a client of ODBM. So IMS Connect is very, very strategic for IMS. It's really the TCP/IP endpoint on the mainframe. Prior to version 11, it was a TCP/IP endpoint for operations management access as well as IMSTM access. You know, so it was an OTMA client previously. And now it is also has evolved into an ODBM client. So we can now have our distributed applications. Again, I'm showing WebSphere, but it's really any platform and any runtime that has a TCP/IP stack enabled. You can use our Universal Database Resource Adapter in this picture, communicating via TCP/IP into IMS Connect, and you can access any IMS database in the entire Sysplex. The protocol that I'm not showing on this chart is DRDA. So we're flowing the DRDA protocol on top of, you know, TCP/IP. DRDA is the Distributed Relational Database Architecture. While the term relational is certainly embedded in the name, it is not restricted to relational data sources. So we are able to take that protocol and leverage it to access IMS. And it's been around since 1988. When I last looked about, you know, 2 years ago when we first embarked on this project, I think it was 22 out of the top 24 database vendors in the world used DRDA for their distributed access mechanism to the data source. It's very, very robust. It handles, you know, all of the global transaction support, so OXA support. It handles all the connection management and everything. And so instead of IMS, you know, reinventing the wheel on this, we leveraged technology that was already out there and made it work for IMS. The next chart, chart 7, is a rather busy chart, but it really shows you, you know, now the kind of the suite of solutions that are available to you as a result of our universal drivers. So you'll see on the distributed side, you'll see the JEE platform coming in through IMS Connect to access any database in the IMS Plex. So it doesn't matter which LPAR this database is on, we can get to it. It also shows non-JEE runtimes. So this is really the standalone Java SE, so Java Standard Edition, you know, a JRE running on any platform can use the universal JDBC driver as well as the universal DO1 driver to communicate in through IMS Connect and, again, provide access to any IMS database in the Plex. The JDBC driver as well is capable of being deployed within our IMS DB, our universal DB resource adapter. So you can have managed JDBC from within a JEE environment. And what I mean by managed is the JEE runtime offers a ton of value add. It handles the entire application lifecycle. It handles the transaction semantics. It handles connection pooling. It deals with connection sharing. As long as you faithfully implement the JCA architecture, which is the Java Connection Architecture, part of that architecture is communication between a resource adapter and the actual JEE server. So as long as you really, you being our resource adapter, faithfully manages and adheres to that API set, we can then offer all the pooling and the sharing and connection management that JEE allows. So again, our JDBC driver is capable of running within the Universal DB resource adapter. And so that's showing the distributed applications. Certainly, again, on the very bottom, there's a rule your own. If, you know, you want to write an application, a non-Java application that you don't require a JRE, you can code directly to the DRDA protocol layer. Looking now on the host side of things, we're just showing that, you know, you can run WASD now, can either go, you know, the traditional ODBA route into IMSDB. And then again, our universal drivers, we're showing them on LPAR B, again, using universal JDBC or DO1 to go through that traditional ODBA route into IMS database. Again, that's from any of the supported Z runtimes. So moving on to chart 8, I'll start covering the various solution highlights, a lot of which I've already discussed. So again, there's three universal drivers. There's a Universal Database Resource Adapter that's compliant at the JCA 1.5 level. We support XA transaction support. What that means is you can have connections to multiple data sources within the same application. So by multiple data sources, they don't all have to be IMS. So you can have two connections to IMS, one connection to DB2, a fourth connection to Oracle, And through XA, you can have all four of those connections under the same unit of work. So either commit all the database activity or roll back all the database activity in one shot. We also provide local transaction support. So given that same application, you can independently control units of work for each connection to each data source. So they're all treated as separate units of work. So you can commit the Oracle work independently of committing the DB2 work, again, independently of committing or rolling back the IMS activity. So we offer both types of transaction semantics with the Universal Database Resource Adapter. We also provide connection pooling, where what we'll do is we'll pool the actual TCP/IP connection to IMS Connect. So if another application is fired up and it requires a connection to the same IMS Connect data source or same IMS Connect instance, which is going to happen very, very often, we'll actually be able to take an already established socket connection out of the connection pool and leverage that instead of going through the whole handshaking protocol again. As a part of that, what we do is we ensure that we always re-authenticate the user, right? Because, you know, the authentication credentials, we expire them when a connection is returned to the pool. So, because we never know and we can't be assured that the same person with the same authentication is going to pull the connection out of the pool. So we make sure that we always re-authenticate at that time. We also have multiple programming models available. I mentioned we offer JDBC under this managed JEE runtime. We also offer CCI, which is the Common Client Interface. That's the traditional JCA programming model. But when you're talking about database access, JDBC is a more natural fit. But we still do offer CCI, and we offer it with both SQL interactions and the DL1 interactions. So you can still use, you know, WebSphere and use JEE and use all this great technology, but still kind of flow traditional DL1 semantics over to the host. Again, we have our universal JDBC driver and DL1 drivers. So again, from the distributed access standpoint, you know, all of these universal drivers support what's known as type 4 connectivity, which means, you know, you're TCP/IP based and you connect directly into the host, and then from there, you know, the data gets you know, updated, you know, modified, accessed, and then shipped right back to the client. And again, we've run in Windows and Z Linux and ZOS, and then within WebSphere Application Server Runtime and within the regular basic Java Standard Edition Runtime as well. Another thing that I'll point out is that Resource Recovery Services, or RRS, is not required if applications don't require distributed two-phase commit. Again, the distributed two-phase commit is that XA transaction support that I mentioned earlier, which means that, you know, I'm connecting to multiple data sources and I want all of that governed within the same unit of work. If you don't require that, then you do not actually need to enable Resource Recovery Services on the host to help manage that side of things. And I'll talk about where RRS does come into play in a future chart. So local connectivity or Type 2 support, you know, our universal drivers will support Type 2 connectivity to IMS databases from the ZOS runtime that I mentioned earlier, which is, you know, WebSphere on Z, IMS Java Dependent Regions, where, you know, IMS does have two Java regions. IMS, you know, since version 7 of IMS, we introduced a JMP region, which is analogous to an MPP, and we introduced a JBP region, which is analogous to a non-message-driven BMP. And, you know, the fundamental difference between those regions and their counterparts is that there is just a JVM there that IMS fully manages, right? So you can actually kick off Java workload in these dependent regions, and you're not going to have to incur the overhead of bringing up a JVM and then destroying the JVM. And then next transaction schedule, bring up a new JVM and then destroy that JVM. You know, that model simply wouldn't work for IMS. So we've introduced these Java regions so that we have a persistent JVM that's always up and ready to handle workload. As well, on the Type 2 side, on the local connectivity side, all of these environments are ZAP eligible. So if there is a ZAP engine in place, that all that Java workload will be offloaded onto these ZAP engines and therefore, you know, won't incur the traditional MIPS charges. So kind of zeroing in a little bit on the JDBC solution, we have had JDBC technology for IMS since version 7, and it's been completely overhauled and re-architected in version 11. some of the things, one of the biggest things that we've done is actually had a standard SQL implementation now for IMS. The SQL that we had in the past, by the past I mean up until and including version 10 of IMS, that SQL was non-standard. There were certain things that we didn't find a nice clean way to get around, and so we had to kind of extend the SQL syntax to enable SQL access to IMS. A very easy example of that is a SQL insert. You insert into a single table. And in IMS, you insert into a single segment. Certainly, you can have path inserts, but aside from that, you insert into a single segment, but you have to establish position in the hierarchy so that you insert that segment under the correct parent structure. And in order to do that, we had to introduce a where clause to say, you know, where this parent's key is that value, you know, and this other parent's key, you know, going up the hierarchy to assign the values so we can establish position in the database for that insert. We've completely been able to get away from that, and I'll explain to you how in a moment. So now our SQL is standard, and so we can fit into other, you know, other tools, and will look much more natural to JDBC developers today. We also have the notion of updatable result sets that have been added. And another big part is JDBC offers a slew of metadata discovery APIs as part of the JDBC interface. And we didn't implement any of those in the previous JDBC releases that we have. In the universal driver, we have implemented these almost entirely. There's still, you know, certain parts of it that don't make sense for IMS, so we don't implement them. That's standard, though. You know, most other databases, actually no other vendor implements the full breadth of the JDBC APIs. They're just too generic and there's just too much there, and so no vendor can actually implement all of it. But by implementing these metadata discovery APIs, it really positions ourselves for full integration with tooling. So, you know, the Flex demo that I show actually drills through our JDBC driver and drills into these metadata discovery interfaces to understand, okay, give me the catalog I'm connected to. Give me every single schema that I'm connected to, which is, you know, PCBs. Now give me, within a schema, give me every table that's there. Give me every column within those tables. Tell me which columns are primary keys. Give me the data types of these columns. Right? We now offer all that information through the JDBC interface. By virtue of tools discovering this information, they can actually model this information. Then they can actually generate SQL queries to drill in and extract that data as a result of understanding the model. So we've come a really, really long way with our universal JDBC implementation. And it's very robust, and the technology is there to really take us forward, moving forward for modernization of IMS. So again, on chart 11, our Java DLI access. You know, we have, you know, as I've mentioned, this universal DL1 driver. And what that does is, you know, for one, it allows standard, you know, DL1 semantics, right, to IMS. But as well, SQL, again, is so generic that it can't, there's a lot of proprietary things in IMS that simply cannot, or proprietary in DL1, that simply cannot be expressed in SQL. So, for example, certain command codes, right, types of lock classes that you can put on your segment search arguments that you're sending in through DL1. There's simply no way to express that in SQL. So there is a need, in many cases, for the usage of the universal DL1 driver, even if you're in, you know, a JDBC application, we actually allow you to drop into using the universal DL1 driver in the same exact application to actually be able to leverage certain DL1 constructs that you need to in order to get your application up and running the way you need it to. So for that reason, we offer the universal DL1 driver. We also have, again, the universal database resource adapter. And again, aside from the JDBC aspect of that, we also allow, you know, again, through the SQL interaction spec and DLI interaction specs, you can have, again, SQL-based and DL1-based interactions for, again, full CRUD, right? So, you know, create, retrieve, update, delete, all that support is there, regardless of whether you're running, you know, type 4 distributed or type 2 local on the mainframe. So the next chart 12, is that's really for your reference. It's just a comparison of different programming approaches. You know, given the certain scenario, which driver do you use, right? And it's mostly straightforward, but it's just nice to have at your reference because we are offering multiple types of universal drivers. So on chart 13, one of the things that we've introduced in our Open Database Universal Driver solution is the notion of foreign keys. So if you look at relational databases, while there certainly isn't a hierarchy, there is the notion of foreign primary key relationships, and what those are actually doing is really enforcing a hierarchy within a relational data store. So to give you a quick flavor, many of you might already know this, but for those of you that don't, there is a way you can set up the constraints, which is quite typical, such that if I'm inserting a row into table B, right, I can say that this row cannot be inserted unless the foreign key in table B that's actually referencing a primary key in another table, we'll say table A, you cannot insert this tuple, this row in B, unless a tuple exists in A such that the foreign key and primary key are the same. So what that's basically saying is don't insert a dependent row, right? The parent in this other table has to exist before you insert the dependent. So we've taken this notion, and it actually mapped perfectly to IMS, because in IMS, anytime you retrieve a segment, you have what's known as a key feedback area, which gives you the keys of all of the parents up to and including that particular segment that you just retrieved. Those really are the foreign keys. So by introducing this notion of what we're calling virtual foreign keys, because they're not in the segment itself, but they are in the key feedback area, which is returned as a part of the retrieval of that segment. We're introducing that concept and then exposing that concept through our metadata discovery APIs so that tools can understand this relationship. But we now have the ability to have standard SQL as a result of that because, when you do an insert and you insert into a certain table and you insert the value for the foreign key, we then use that to position under the appropriate parents in the hierarchy, right? So we have standard SQL now, and I keep mentioning insert, but that was the one glaring flaw. But as well for select, update, and delete, this notion of the foreign key is actually there, and it's actually no additional overhead to actually expose that out, at runtime because, again, if, you access a segment and you happen to want the column that we're designating as the foreign key, we don't have to do any additional processing to get that because the data is already there in the key feedback area that we already have as a result of that call. So it's a really nice mapping, and it really enabled us to have standardized SQL. So moving forward on to chart 14, I talk about the XA support, the distributed transaction support. So one of the things that offers, again, is the ability to have, a client access multiple data sources, have them all managed in the same unit of work. It also has implications on the host side. So we can have IMS Connect on one LPAR accessing an IMS database on another LPAR in the Plex, and that work is all going to be managed under the same unit of work. And what we use is what's called cascaded transactions. So this example is showing IMS Connect will register with RRS as the parent in this unit of recovery. And then ODBM on a separate LPAR will register with RRS. So it'll get a token, and it'll register as the child. And so then there's a coordinated relationship across LPARs, across the two, RRS managers, so that all of the work from end to end is now completely managed under the same unit of work. So again, if you don't need this type of topology, if you don't need this type of transaction behavior, I should say, you don't actually need RRS, right? That's really only to manage, the global transaction or XA transaction model. Query governance on chart 15 is another big thing that we've added into the product, and that's there are 100 ways to write an SQL query that returns the same results. But by and large, 99 of those ways are just the wrong way to write that query. And that's why there's so much invested in query optimization and query plans and all of this stuff just to have the most efficient query possible. One of the things that we've done in our approach is that we really, first and foremost, we really only offer the SQL dialect such that the IMS DBMS can process it natively. And what I mean by that is, in SQL, you can join any two tables in the table space. It doesn't matter. In IMS, however, IMS is only capable of joining those tables that are on the same hierarchic path. So if you try to join tables that are not along the same hierarchic path, we had one of two choices. Choice one was reject the query with a nice error indicating why you couldn't do it, or B, satisfy that query and do full table scans, complete database scans, and filter all of the results in the application space. We chose not to go that route for the very obvious reasons of we're going to be killing concurrency and killing performance because we're doing all of this work in the application space and not in the DBMS itself. So that's the approach we've taken. Now, there's certainly considerations where for aggregate support, average, min, max, count, sum, order by, group by clauses, we support all of those because they're fast, cheap, and easy to do, right? So it's not entirely accurate to say that we only support SQL that we can actually process native. We do add on top some other SQL additions, some other SQL dialect, but it's really things that we can do very, very cost effectively. And so we also have some additional governance candidates that we're looking at, which is, again, enforce that you have to qualify on the root keys, right? This will make queries much more efficient. We don't force that, but we can have a governance level such that for this set of applications, you have to do that. Another one is periodic commit processing. This is completely not aligned with JDBC, but the reality is we have customers out there today that are wanting to batch update over a million records, and they don't want to fail at the 999,000 record and have to redo this whole batch update. So they want periodic commits internally as we're going through in this big batch update. So we might deviate a little bit to actually enable some of these types of bells and whistles and stuff, but we're willing to do that if it makes sense. So chart 16, it's actually meant to be an animated chart, but you can look and it's very clear that we will allow, the blue is saying we'll allow you to join tables A, E, and G, or tables E and G, or A and E, or E and F, or again, B and C, but we won't allow you to join B and D unless there's actually a logic relationship in place, right, such that, okay, the database can, the DBMS can, in fact, effectively join these two tables together. Chart 17, I normally show the demo again, where I actually push invalid SQL queries through this tool, and then you'll see how we reject them immediately and don't bother even sending the request onwards to the host because we know the host isn't capable of processing that type of query. These next few charts are mostly take-home. They're just kind of showing, the relationships between IMS Connect and ODBM and what their roles and responsibilities are and what's been added to them in support of this new open database function. So, again, very briefly, IMS Connect is this TCP/IP endpoint. It's the ODBM client. ODBM is this open database manager address base. It processes the actual database requests. So IMS Connect will handle authentication. ODBM, by virtue of ODBA, will actually handle authorization. So just because you're authenticated, so you have a RACF profile, doesn't mean you're actually authorized to access the database you're trying to get access to. So just like with traditional IMS, there is both an authentication and an authorization phase that we go through to make sure that you are who you say you are and you are authorized to access those database resources. So IMS Connect, chart 19, there's some new commands available. There's a new routing exit for ODBM, a new security exit for ODBM that we've added. Chart 20 talks about workload distribution. If there's multiple IMS data sources that are either cloned or data shared, IMS Connect can in fact route to these different data sources, and so there's a routing mechanism in place where Connect will make sure it evenly distributes the workload across these different IMS data sources. Chart 21 is really just talking more about ODBM. There's some new Type 2 commands that are there because ODBM is this new address space. So we have commands to, start the address space, stop the address space, update the configuration members of that address space. There's a lot of new commands that are available there. So this chart, again, is mainly a reference chart for you. Chart 22 and 23 is just kind of the next phase of this, and a little disclaimer that I had to put in on chart 23. what I want to talk about is you know, this support, you know, isn't actually out in the field yet, yet we already have customers that are doing quite heavy usage of it as a part of our Version 11 QPP program, and we actually already are anticipating other players to actually leverage this technology, you know, pretty much immediately. So one of those areas of growth or of usage of Open Database is Web 2.0. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail here, but Web 2.0 really just refers to kind of web development and web design, you know, that's really using the web as a platform for software delivery, right? So it's a way to quickly and easily create what's called mashups and web-based applications, and a lot of those are based on feeds that are coming from other data sources out there in that are accessible from distributed platforms. So what does IBM offer? Chart 25, they offer this IBM Mashup Center, right, which is a combination of two products, which is Lotus Mashups and InfoSphere Mashup Hub, that are all kind of bundled together in this IBM Mashup Center, which really facilitates, you know, Web 2.0 and RESTful service invocation. So chart 26, you know, what the Mashup Hub does is it enables you to create feeds from different data sources, different transaction managers, and then really kind of filter these feeds, annotate the feeds, and then publish these feeds into a catalog for discovery. Once those feeds are created and they're published in the catalog, you can then use a tool, chart 27, IBM Lotus Mashups, to quickly assemble and share these different mashups and feeds and actually create these beautiful web-based applications that are, again, built on RESTful services. So what we have today, you know, by today, I'm talking in version 10 of IMS, we have Web 2.0 support for IMS. Right, and so it offers this capability to expose your IMS transactions as RESTful services, right? And so there's a lot of, you know, there's transaction feed panels that have been built specifically for IMS, these wizards that take you through kind of exposing your existing IMS transactions as feeds for integration into this whole Web 2.0 kind of framework. Chart 29 is just showing there's this IMS transaction editor where you specify your connection properties and you specify your transaction parameter properties, and then you've created an IMS feed, which really means you provided the ability to invoke an existing IMS transaction. So chart 30 is really talking about, you know, what the IMS Mashup Center currently has. It currently does support feed generation from several databases that offer JDBC implementations, right? So DB2, IDS, Derby, Oracle, you know, Microsoft SQL Server, et cetera, right? And as a part of this feed creation, it actually supports SQL query generation. So it'll actually generate the SQL query on behalf of the kind of the Web 2.0 designer, and there's a lot of GUI panels to facilitate this. Well, I imagine you can see where I'm going. IMS version 11 now offers, you know, a rich JDBC implementation. It offers the metadata discovery that the Mashup Center currently uses to help generate the feeds and have the nice UI to model the databases and actually generate SQL queries. So our statement of direction is to support this creation of RESTful services and feed generation, feeding into the IBM Mashup Center and leveraging the universal drivers for this JDBC connectivity to IMS. So stay tuned in this space, and you'll be, in any event, this is the statement of direction. I'll stop there. So future considerations, right? You know, we've had since version 9, we had XML database support. In version 10 of IMS, we had XQuery support. So we want to, a future consideration is to actually enable this XML database XQuery technology on top of our existing universal drivers as well. We have an IMS simplification agenda that I want to socialize with you a little bit in the upcoming charts, and we want to be able to integrate this solution into the simplification agenda, as well as, you know, really explore integration opportunities with other IBM offerings. You know, really take advantage of the robust IBM portfolio, and start, you know, finding ways where you can exploit the portfolio and then kind of integrate IMS with it, and, you know, moving forward. So chart 32, this just is, you know, for those of you that aren't familiar with XMLDB and XQuery, XML database really offered a way to view hierarchical data as, you know, a collection of XML documents. So view your IMS databases as collections of XML documents. You know, XML is hierarchic, IMS is hierarchic, it's a very natural fit. This technology doesn't require you to change anything about the structure of your existing IMS databases, nor the data. So existing COBOL applications, for example, still process this data as they always had. But using XML database, we will actually render the database contents as XML documents. XQuery in version 10 then allows you to use the XQuery syntax to actually query the individual components of this collection of XML documents. So it's just a further enhancement to the XML database support we offered in version 9. And, you know, that's, again, there's no change to existing IMS data or transactions or applications for both XML database nor XQuery support. So I want to get into the last couple charts on the IMS simplification agenda. And I'll give you a little bit of background. Chart 34, we have really launched in 2009 a Rethink IMS campaign, and it's seen a lot of success so far. What we do is we have a dedicated SOA team here in IMS, or dedicated team really within IMS, that puts on a lot of roadshows. They're free roadshows. We reach out to client reps in certain areas. This is global. It's not just restricted to the United States. We reach out to client teams and, you know, put on roadshows in certain cities, get as many customers as we can there, and really start socializing our solutions. And the idea there is to help them with proof of technology, proof of concepts, and get them to better understand the features and capabilities that they already have that they just aren't aware of. And what we're seeing as a result of this is there is definitely a growing trend to modernize IMS applications from both the access part as well as developing brand new IMS workloads. So this new workload is growing more than we had hoped, which is fantastic. And now, as a result of 11, you know, our Universal Driver Framework, they're already showing signs of making a really, really tremendous impact in this arena of new application growth. And then what we've seen is that IMS is really, again, proving to be strategic from both the transaction management standpoint and the database standpoint. But again, there's a lot more opportunities that exist out there to really simplify the usage of IMS. And we're going to continue building on this momentum that we've created. So there is a perception out there that we're changing, that IMS has outdated technology. But the reality is that new technologies and solutions keep on coming. They've been doing this for 40 years, and there's really always something that's new in IMS, and by new, not just new, but new and relevant. And what we're really focusing on is the relevancy of these new solutions that we're putting into IMS. And we're making sure that we really make sure we socialize that appropriately so that our customer base is, in fact, aware of the technology that they have available to them. What we're seeing is that the key decision makers really are now taking advantage of workshops and education really to understand these new capabilities. So we had a COBOL hands-on workshop in 2009. We have planned for Java hands-on workshops in 2010. And we have regional user groups that are meeting worldwide. And we're really seeing a lot of traction, and we're seeing a lot of opportunity for more and more growth as a result of this. A lot of it's just awareness, but we are seeing a lot of proof of concepts pop out as a result of this. And a lot of our customers now are really maximizing the opportunities to really target new workload that utilizes these various solutions. So again, you know, while these solutions are providing significant business value, and we continue to simplify them, you know, we have to. There's more we can do to really encourage broader IMS usage. So as a part of this whole exercise of this Rethink IMS campaign, you know, we've really centered on three very basic but very large, you know, application development challenges, right? One of them is resource creation, right? The creation and modification of databases, the creation and modification of transactions. You know, IMS wasn't built necessarily to be dynamic, right? There's a gen process that you have to go through in order to bring these resources online, in order to update these resources, you know, add a new field to a database, change the length of a segment, create a new IMS transaction. There's a lot of you know, things there that aren't dynamic yet, and there's more work to be done in that space. You start seeing some of that roll out with our Type 2 commands for modblocks resources. Well, there's more we need to do to really enable that for the whole, you know, breadth of IMS resources. As well, from the application development side, right, the technology is there, but we need to provide more assistance actually building these new applications. So it's one thing to offer JDBC and offer SQL. It's another to offer tooling capabilities to help you build JDBC and SQL-based applications, either, you know, visual design, graphic design, integration with other offerings in the portfolio that already do help generate JDBC SQL-based applications. You know, and never forget the what we're not forgetting is the fact that we are DL1 based. So where we look at these tools in the portfolio that offer JDBC SQL-based access, how can we augment them? What can we do to help them generate and do the same things for DL1 based access? There's a lot of things that we're looking at that we have kind of targeted as very strategic for IMS that we're marching towards down the line. Again, application deployment and testing is another one. There is an opportunity to provide more assistance in deploying these applications and testing them, and we're starting to really hear these same themes over and over and over again and hear them enough that we need to start mobilizing and acting on them. Right, so the needs, again, going to chart 37, is on the application development side, right? We're really centering on Eclipse as the foundation, right, for kind of that's really a nice framework. It's really the IDE for building new applications, right? So what we're looking at is providing a collection of Eclipse-based components to really ease the burden, right? Ease these IMS application resource development and deployment tasks, right? And provide some IMS-specific value add to existing IBM strategic development environments, right? So provide code assistance, provide graphical editors. And obviously provide an extensible interface so other parties can actually plug into it and take advantage of our base offerings. Right, so we're really moving down this path now of looking at integration, looking at what we can do from the actual application generation side of things to really help facilitate the modernization of really IMS access overall. So chart 38, you know, I talk a lot about what we want to do to help, and we are talking about an integration strategy. We're not talking about a separation strategy. So, you know, a lot of whether you're accessing relational data source or hierarchical data source, the UI look and feel and how you get from point A to point B to point C should look the same. It should look as same as possible, so it's the same user experience to get from one place to another as you're navigating, you know, going through any kind of graphical based tool. And so what we're looking at is, you know, where appropriate panel integration, you know, where even more appropriate, instead of loose coupled, have tightly coupled integration. And, you know, have the kind of similar approaches to similar logical functions, right? So like learning crossover is as minimized as possible. Now, the reality is there's always going to be aspects of tools that are different due to differences in the underlying technologies, right? And we're going to see that with IMS as well. At some point, we got to recognize that IMS is hierarchic, and so things are going to be different. And that really is the same even if you're dealing with relational data sources. You know, Oracle is a little different than DB2 LUW, which, again, is a little different than DB2Z when you're looking at just the actual SQL dialect itself. So at some point, you've got to diverge, right? So we're well aware that we're going to be divergent, but we're going to make sure that we diverge as low as possible and have the higher levels just remain consistent with the other types of models and paradigms that exist. So my last chart 39, is really kind of the overall strategy, right? Simplify the development, simplify resource generation or resource definition and management tasks, and then, again, you know, simplify the management as well, right? So focus on reducing the skills to configure, manage, and operate, you know, IMS. And so I really wanted to kind of give you guys at least a taste of we know what a lot of the pain points are, and we've done a lot to address them, but there's a lot more that we're still going to be looking to doing. So, again, I'm finished. Thank you for your time. Again, at IOD in a few weeks, I'll be presenting, you know, this. I'll be presenting three different talks. This talk, one on, you know, kind of easing IMS usage, and then a joint talk with a customer, Delta, who's actually already leveraging some of our Java technology. So, thanks again for your time, and I'll turn it over to the moderator now.
Thank you, Kyle. Now we will like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live Q&A session with a presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Question 1. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's conference. If it was high, press star 1. Medium, press star 2. Low, press star 3. Again, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. High, press star 1. Medium, press star 2. Low, press star 3. One moment, please. Question number 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference at the right level? Press star 1. Not technical enough? Press star 2. More technical than I needed to hear? Press star 3. Again, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference at the right level? Press star 1. Not technical enough? Press star 2. More technical than I needed to hear? Press star 3. One moment, please. Question number 3. What version of IMS are you currently on? Version 10, press star 1. Version 9, press star 2. Version 8, press star 3. And version 7, press star 4. What version of IMS are you currently on? Version 10, press star 1. Version 9, press star 2. Version 8, press star 3. And version 7 and below, press star 4. One moment. Question number 4. For those not on IMS 10, what is your planned use of IMS 10? Do you plan to install IMS 10 in the next 6 to 12 months? Press star 1. Are you interested in moving to IMS 10 within the next 2 years? Press star 2. Are you not interested in IMS 10 at this time? Press star 3. Again, for those not on IMS 10, what is your planned use of IMS 10? To install IMS 10 in the next 6 to 12 months, press star 1. Are you interested in moving to IMS 10 within the next 2 years? Press star 2. Are you not interested in IMS 10 at this time? Press star 3. One moment, please. Question number 5. We hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Again, we hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. Yes, star 1. No, star 2. One moment, please. That does conclude our survey. Thank you for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. And at this time, I would like to turn the call back over to our speaker while we wait for questions.
One of the things that I'll mention now is that I talked about the type 4 and the type 2 drivers. the Universal Type 2 drivers, you know, like all three of them, the DB Resource Adapter, DBC driver, and DL1 driver, we are planning on retrofitting those back to version 10 of IMS as well. Not the Type 4 function, not the whole IMS Connect ODBM stuff, but there is a requirement right now to have us put the Type 2 back on 10, and so we are looking at that right now.
At this time, sir, there are no further questions.
Cool, thanks.
I'd like to turn the call back over to the speaker for any closing comments.
All right, again, thanks everyone for your time. And again, if you have any questions down the line, you know, feel free to contact me via email, or if you're going to the conference in a few weeks, you know, we can talk directly in person. So thanks a lot for your time.